Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the 115th episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
Hello, awesome people. I am Daniel.
And I'm his lovely wife, Melissa.
Wait, he doesn't say that normally. Why did he change it?
Because
I'm in a weird mood.
Changing it up, babe.
Changing it. It's change you can count on.
So we are going to apologize for a few things before we get started. Our son is turning the big 16 years old. And in the other room...
He has strippers.
...are five of his man-child friends. So you might hear them.
Noisy boys. Yep.
We told them to give us an hour, so hopefully they won't get too crazy. But yep. One did bring his electric guitar.
And an amp. So hopefully that doesn't start up.
Daniel tried to get them to go outside and go in the pool, but that didn't work.
Pool's ice cold, but it's warm out. Go figure.
But we didn't threaten anything. We just said, please, for the love of all that is holy and good, shut up.
Shut the heck up. Apology number two
is...
I'm not doing any factoids.
Why?
Because I've been under Melissa's car doing brakes. Because I'm a working man and I do my own brakes. Or her own brakes. I do someone's brakes. And it's a pain in the ass. And it was frustrating. And I had to take a shower afterwards because it was that bad.
You still have grease on your arms.
I do?
Yeah. See?
Oh, no. Good thing we have white couches. Nope.
No, we don't. Not anymore. But Daniel's been working a lot. And people think it doesn't take you very long to do factoids, but he actually really tries. So no factoids today. So we are just going to banter for 15 minutes.
And I'm slow.
Psych.
I'm a slow reader. So it takes me a long time to gather things and put things together in my head.
You didn't let me finish because now people are really going to think we're going to banter for 15 minutes. We are actually not going to banter. We're just going to jump into this case.
Okay, begin. Plus, I want to get to cooking. I'm making tacos. I'm going to do steak and chicken tacos on the griddle. It's going to be fabulous. The boys are starving. I'm starving. You drank my espresso coffee. Now I'm at a deficit.
Zip it, sir. Let me start this thing.
Okay, begin.
Oh, wait, we have to do Patreon shout outs.
Oh, yes.
I wrote them down for you, darling, while you were under my car doing my brakes.
We really appreciate you guys putting your faith in us and your money every month. We really appreciate it because it does help.
Absolutely.
And we're trying the best we can. Melissa works her ass off. I don't. I do it. I do, but other ways. Obviously not at the podcast. So for those of you that want to help out our humble podcast, we really do appreciate it. And Amy H., thank you so much. Christine A., thanks, Christine. Catriona T., that's a cool name. Thanks, Catriona. And Mary P., thank you, Mary. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for becoming a part of our dysfunctional, lovely community of Patreons.
I'll try and do better. I just have to be here more.
Oh, it's fine. So it's working out.
We can produce stuff.
I know. We do want to produce a lot more content over on Patreon, but I think we do a fair amount.
Yeah. And I actually have upcoming projects to work on in our podcast room. We're remodeling it again. It's going to look like a hospital room with a curtain that we pull all the way around us.
It's going to be cool.
Yeah. Because we're still a little echoey. So
we are. But we want to start doing video over on Patreon and lives and all that good stuff. So come join us over there if you can. We'd greatly appreciate it. All right, let's jump into this thing. We've said it three times. Daniel, you ready for my case?
I'm ready.
All right, this is a case of Larry and Marianne Hughes.
Cool.
On March 29th, 1990, in the small and rural town of Pulaski, Tennessee, 43-year-old Marianne Hughes called the Giles County Sheriff's Department to report her husband, 43-year-old Larry Hughes, missing. Marianne had not heard from Larry in over 36 hours. Soon the authorities were interviewing Marianne at the 100-acre cattle farm she owned with her husband of almost 17 years. Marianne said that the night of the 27th, she and Larry had gone out for a nice dinner around 7 p.m. Larry had chicken, a salad, and a side of peaches.
Peaches. Interesting. Yeah. Does peaches go with chicken?
It does. It sounds like something my grandpa would have had.
You know what I love?
What's that?
Cottage cheese with peaches.
You do?
Yeah.
Canned peaches.
Well, God, yeah. I'm not going to cut them. Takes too long. No, you got to get the ones in heavy syrup, you know, because they're healthy for you. Nope, they're not. And you put them on. Oh, it's fabulous. Right on the cottage cheese. Anyway, so chicken with a side of peaches.
Salad.
And salad.
Yeah, Larry seemed like Larry really cared about what he put in his body.
Good for him.
After the couple arrived home, they hung out and eventually went to bed around 10 or 10:30 in that area. The next morning, Marianne said she was up by 5 a.m. and left the house around 7 a.m. to head to her job at the local hardware store that the couple were also partners in. So not only did they own the hardware store with a few other people, they also worked at the hardware store.
So they were self-employed.
They were, and had a cattle farm.
Wow, they're busy.
They really were. And Wednesdays are the days that Larry and Marianne usually had off, which was the specific day.
Hump day.
But she went she went into work and he stayed home.
Oh, so not no humping.
Well, not on this Wednesday.
Gotcha.
So Larry had the day off from the store and he said goodbye to Marianne while drinking a cup of coffee sitting in the house. He was probably in the kitchen is what I'm thinking. Or standing at the doorway, waving goodbye to Marianne as she left for work. When Marianne left, she said everything was fine. Everything was normal. Everything was exactly how it normally would be.
Perfect.
She attempted to contact Larry at home around noon, but there was no answer. Marianne finished her day at the hardware store and was dropped off at home between 5 and 5:30 that evening. She had actually gotten a ride to work from her neighbor who also happened to work at the hardware store.
Cool.
And the same neighbor dropped her off. Marianne walked into the house and Larry was not there, but his car was still parked in the exact same spot, which was strange. Because where would Larry have gone without letting Marianne know?
Yeah.
They were kind of very much tied together in life, in work, and all of those things.
Right.
So he never would have just left without telling her where he was going. And she noticed that the animals have not been fed.
Oh.
Yeah.
And how big? I wasn't listening at first. How big a property do they have?
100 acres.
100 acres. Okay.
And I believe this was the property that Larry actually grew up on, or it was his grandparents' property.
Gotcha.
And then he and Marianne bought it.
Okay.
And then started running the cattle farm.
That's what I want to do when I grow up.
Sounds lovely.
Cattle farm?
No. Those are a lot of living things for you to be responsible of.
After watching that... Dr. Pohl. What's his name? Pohl.
Pohl.
Yeah. Nope. Don't want to do it.
You don't want to stick your hand inside negative. The
no.
rectum nope. of a steer?
Any orifice of any animal. I'm out.
He's pretty magical.
No, I don't.
And he does it without gloves sometimes. Oh, we could totally do an episode on that, but let me get back to this.
I get it. I mean, the rubber, it's just not the same feeling. So I understand. I really do. And, you know, and he's a professional.
Oh,
he knows what he's going. Okay. So anyway, 100 acres. Go. Got it. Cattle farm.
Marianne also noticed that Larry's 22 pistol. Is that how you would say that?
Sure.
22 handgun, gauge.
Pistol.
Yeah.
Not a rifle.
Not a rifle. It was a pistol.
Perfect.
Was gone from a shed on the property as well. So not only was Larry not there, his pistol was missing.
How would you notice a pistol missing from a shed?
Ding, ding, ding.
I mean, is that the first thing you go looking for? You start hunting through the outbuildings of your property to go, oh my gosh.
I think she was looking for him, is what she was saying, is that she was going to all the buildings, looking around the property for Larry. And she might have also been thinking, well, Larry's, I believe it was his dad, or I think it was his dad, had a stroke out on the property.
Oh.
All alone and crawled back to the house.
Oh, geez.
On his own after he had a stroke. And this property has hills, and it has a ravine, and it's heavily wooded. I mean, it's a beautiful piece of property, but if you get hurt out there and you're alone, it's a scary situation. So she was trying to look everywhere for Larry.
Okay.
Worried, Marianne gets in her car and starts driving around the area looking for Larry, even picking up her brother Rex to help look for him, but they obviously never found him. And with no word from Larry in over a day, Marianne finally reported him missing. I do want people to realize this day and age, you do not have to wait 24 hours to report someone missing.
That's not a thing.
If you know they're missing, you call immediately and report them missing and then go from there.
Mm-hmm.
When asked if Larry had any enemies, Marianne said no. Actually, Larry was well-liked, maybe a little too well-liked by the other ladies in town. Marianne suggested that maybe Larry had run off with another woman. What?
And then abandoned his cattle?
Right.
I don't buy that. No.
But after not hearing from Larry in almost 2 days, Marianne then became concerned and called the authorities.
Yeah.
Investigators immediately started contacting friends and family of Larry's and Marianne's. No one had seen or heard from Larry since the 27th, so 2 days before. But everyone they talked to or even stopped on the street in this tight-knit community had nothing but nice things to say about Larry. And there were no rumors about an affair, and there were no rumors concerning issues in the Hughes marriage.
Hmm.
So where was Larry?
Where was Larry?
And was he actually missing? Or had he chosen to go missing? So these are the two questions the police or the sheriff's department have to answer.
I don't think a guy who's grown up on kind of a farm type upbringing and has like cattle, that's his responsibility. I can't think he would just up and leave that. I feel like that takes a special kind of person to do that anyway. So that kind of person isn't going to just walk away from his cows.
I agree.
You basically are a homebody because you stick to your ranch or your farm or your dairy or whatever it happens to be. So for someone like that to just disappear is very unusual.
And you were on a very strict time schedule.
Absolutely.
Everything has to be by the book, by the hour.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with living things that you're taking care of.
And that's your life. And you have satisfaction because these animals are counting on you.
Absolutely.
So in a way, it's very fulfilling.
If that's what you choose to do.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, absolutely. You have purpose. So it would be odd for someone to just give all that up and disappear and just walk away.
100%. A few days into the investigation of Larry's disappearance, there were still zero leads. Investigators decided to reach out further into the public for help, going outside of Giles County. Within a couple of days, a phone call came into the department. A woman from Franklin, Tennessee, which is about 45 minutes from Pulaski, said that she had seen Larry having dinner with another woman after he had gone missing. So now we have an eyewitness.
All right.
While investigating their new lead, another phone call came into the sheriff's department. It was one of the Hughes neighbors, and they were watching Marianne cut up and burn a mattress.
Oh, boy.
She put the mattress cover in a 55-gallon drum and set it on fire and was removing all the stuffing from inside the mattress. The authorities rushed back to the farm and caught Marianne and asked her what she was doing. She told them that she didn't want the bed anymore because she was mad that Larry had been with another woman. So she was burning the bed.
How does she know he was with another woman?
That's what she's saying, is that she thinks he ran off with another woman and left her.
Huh.
But it seemed legitimate, right? I mean, she's pissed.
I guess so.
He left her for another woman, so she's going to burn the marital bed.
Okay.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah, or you could just throw it away.
True.
But I get it. You have a farm-ish, ranch, whatever. You burn things.
Instead of burning pictures and his clothes, you're going to burn the mattress.
Yeah.
Where you bumping uglies regularly. Investigators collected what was left of the mattress, which was really just the stuffing, and placed it into the evidence bags and then left the property because there was nothing more they could do.
So they didn't want to pursue that and do a search warrant or anything else. They just collected the...
They just collected the stuffing.
Can they do that? Can they collect stuff if they don't have a warrant?
I think if she lets you, she's like, sure, you can have it.
Oh, okay.
But really what ended up happening was they believed that Larry had ran off with this woman that he was spotted with in Franklin, Tennessee. So really the investigation stopped because they thought that Larry just up and left.
Just skipped town.
Yeah, he didn't want to be there anymore.
Gotcha.
So they were like, well, let's take the stuffing just in case.
Okay. So they weren't thinking there was a homicide.
They were not thinking it was a homicide.
He can't stand this woman anymore, so he up and left.
Exactly. They just thought it was a man sick of his wife wanting some new stuff.
He up and R-U-N-N-O-F-T.
Run off. I had to spell that in my head. I guess you were going.
That is from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, did not catch the reference. Larry was born in 1946 and lived his life in Pulaski. He was actually kind of a local celebrity in high school. Not only was Larry a popular basketball player with a college scholarship lined up, but was also just a really charismatic and nice guy. He was like this all-around great guy. But in the summer of 1964, right after high school graduation, Larry was working part-time in the meat department at the town's grocery store. And one day, his right hand became caught in a meat grinder.
Oh.
And he actually ended up losing his hand.
Oh, God. Okay.
In turn, losing his college scholarship because he couldn't play basketball anymore.
Right. Well, the good news is...
What?
He can't double dribble.
Oh my gosh.
What?
I'm just looking at that. Wasn't good.
I'm just trying to look at the positive side of things.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how Larry was, actually.
Yeah.
So maybe Larry would have said that sentence at one time or another.
Look, see? Can't double dribble anymore.
Yeah. But according to those who knew Larry, he picked himself up and moved on. The loss of his hand never held him back. Now, he didn't lose his entire hand. He really just lost his fingers, probably half of the top. And I think his thumb remained in what I could see in pictures.
Gotcha.
So he was still able to live a very fulfilling life with just part of a hand.
And get picked up on the side of the road for rides. Because he still has his thumb.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You mean like hitchhike?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't hitchhike anymore.
Well, you can't hitchhike without a thumb.
Oh, Daniel.
Because what are you going to, right?
Daniel.
People won't
know. He had a thumb on his left hand.
Well, what if he's right-handed?
You can still hold
his thumb. Statistically, he's right-handed, so.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, Larry still loved to hunt and fish, and he still played the guitar. That's awesome.
He just wasn't as handy.
Becoming a local Pulaski businessman and farmer. And he was very respected throughout the community.
That's cool.
So I guess to kind of sum Larry up for all of you is that he was just this great guy.
He was the pride of Pulaski.
Seriously, everybody loved Larry and would talk about his high school days and, you know, how he lost his hand in such a tragic accident.
Yeah.
But he just went on with life and never let it get him down.
That's cool.
Larry and Marianne met and started dating in 1972. Larry was divorced from his first wife and was helping to raise their young daughter, while Marianne was a single mother of three boys.
Oh, goodness. That's a lot of work.
The two hit it off, and to friends and family, the couple seemed like a great match. They were fun and social and seemed to really get along. The couple were married by February of 1973 and blended their young families. Larry's daughter spending the summers at the farm with her dad and bonus family. Everyone seemed to get along really well, and the couple soon bought the 100-acre farm and began raising cattle and eventually became partners in the local hardware store. Cool. So everything I'd said before. So life was really, really good.
Yeah.
And by 1990, Larry and Marianne were empty nesters, enjoying the quietness of the farm and days spent at the store with the local patrons and in the community. The marriage between Larry and Marianne seemed solid and happy.
So at this point, they're older-ish.
Yeah, they were married for 17 years. At this point, they've been married for 17 years. Okay. Gotcha. So they are in, like I said, they're in their 40s. Okay. They're our age.
They're old.
They're already empty nesters at our age.
Well, they started earlier.
Ugh, we should have started earlier. No, I'm just joking.
How much earlier?
I'm just joking.
Pre-21, you think?
Yeah, they were young when they started having their kids individually.
Okay.
Larry and Marianne. They were in their early 20s.
But they didn't have any together.
They didn't have any together. Okay. No, they had four.
That should be enough.
That is enough. Yeah. And Larry's sweet daughter would come and visit in the summer and on holidays. So this was really her second home. She didn't live too far away. But there was one person in Larry's life who was very suspicious of his disappearance and knew that he would never have just abandoned his wife, Marianne. And this was his daughter, Benet. Within hours of her father missing, Benet was searching through the house, looking for any clue as to where her father could be, because she knew he would never just up and leave the farm and never up and leave them or Marianne. Benet made her way into Larry's bathroom and opened the top drawer. Benet knew that inside this particular drawer was where Larry had kept all of his personal belongings. And sure enough, she saw her dad's wedding ring, his wallet, and his watch. And his car keys.
Oh my gosh.
So according to Benet, her dad was a creature of habit. If he was leaving the house or his life in general, Larry would have taken those items with him. There's no way he would have left those items.
Absolutely. There's no way. He would take everything and be out.
And knowing that if her dad wasn't at home, he was working at the hardware store or tending to the cattle and farm. That was it. That was his entire life. When asked if she believed her father was having an affair, she said that he and Marianne were so tightly intertwined that she didn't know how either of them could have had an affair.
Yep.
They were always together. Benet knew something was wrong and started investigating her dad's disappearance on her own. Because like I said before, the investigators just kind of thought that Larry had ran off. So the search for Larry really stopped after that woman came forward and said that she had seen him.
Because they didn't have any indication to the alternative.
Yeah, there was no evidence of foul play or of there being a crime scene. There wasn't anything.
Yeah.
And nobody had ever said, yeah, the marriage was in trouble or anything like that. Now, Benet even went to Franklin, Tennessee, and met with the woman who had said that she had seen Larry with another woman. When shown photos, this woman identified Marianne as the woman she had seen Larry with in the restaurant. So the eyewitness's timeline was off.
Mm.
She thought she had seen Larry after he disappeared, but really she had seen him before he disappeared with Marianne.
Gotcha. So there was no mystery woman.
There was no mystery woman. Or at least, mystery woman was Marianne.
Yeah, at least as far as everyone knows.
So where is Larry? Where the heck is Larry?
Okay, well, he didn't take his vehicle.
No.
He didn't take his wallet.
No.
Didn't take anything.
Nothing.
So how far could a guy get with nothing?
On foot?
And abandoning his hungry moo moo cows.
Yeah. Larry didn't go anywhere.
I don't think so.
Of his own free will.
Probably somewhere on the 100 acres.
Okay, well.
In my opinion.
Unfortunately, 16 days after Larry had been reported missing, his body was found.
Oh, geez.
On April 13th, two children were playing in an area off of Gunter Road where local people dispose of their junk. And it wasn't officially a landfill, but it was like a landfill on the side of the road in a ditch.
It was just a place where people illegally dump trash.
Exactly.
Gotcha. The public dump.
The public dump.
That's nice.
In a ditch, in a beautiful wooded area.
So did this community not have an official place?
That's something
to take?
I did not look up.
No, it doesn't matter.
Whether or not they had a dump.
I always ask that too. Like, all garbage collection is part of taxes. So everyone has a garbage can. And if you live in the county, you can take anything to the dump almost 100% of the time. It's free. Yet how is there such an astronomically high amount of garbage dumped on the side of the road?
That's a great question.
Like, more than ever. I don't get it. Anyway.
All right. Well, the boys smelled something foul. And as they got closer, they saw what they thought was the decomposing remains of a hog.
Oh.
Until they saw a human foot. And as they got closer and started moving trash around, they realized the foot was attached to a decomposing body.
Oh, God.
Police were called to the gruesome scene, and the body was completely nude. There was nothing on this body. And due to the extreme decomposition, Larry was identified by his missing hand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. During the autopsy, it was discovered that Larry had been shot twice in the back of the head with a .22 caliber bullet from a pistol, from a handgun.
So the missing, potentially the missing one from the shed.
Ding, 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 sir. Weird. Larry had not disappeared. He had been murdered and thrown away into a ditch with garbage. He was just thrown away like the trash.
Yeah.
Along with recovering the bullets from his skull, Larry's stomach contents actually matched the dinner Marianne said he had on their last night together at the restaurant.
So he had to have perished shortly thereafter.
Right, which now we know that food takes a while to digest, and it's usually between 6 to 8 hours. So he was murdered 6 to 8 hours after he had eaten dinner with Marianne that night.
So once he died, the body kind of stops functioning at that point.
Right. And it was really easy for them to see what his stomach contents were.
Gotcha. So very short period of time.
Yeah, it was only within a few hours.
Okay. Huh.
Bullets from Larry and Marianne's shooting range on their farm were compared with the .22 caliber bullets recovered from Larry's skull, and they were a match.
Mm.
So Larry's missing .22 was believed to be the murder weapon.
Wow.
Soon after Larry's body was found, police were interviewing one of the Hughes' neighbors, a Mr. Rainey. Mr. Rainey told investigators that around 3 a.m. on the morning of the 28th, he saw an unknown pickup truck back up under a carport that was attached to the Hughes home and saw the porch light come on, and then just as quickly, the light went off. And a little while later, the truck leaves and drives away, which left Mr. Rainey confused and concerned because this was very unusual for him to see this.
Yeah.
So much so that once Marianne had left for work a few hours later, he walked over to Larry's house and knocked on the front door, and there was no response.
Hmm.
Mr. Rainey walked back home and called the Hughes landline multiple times, and there was no answer, which means Larry wasn't there that morning.
So that kind of matches the time schedule. Right.
Well, Marianne says that she left him and he was fine at 7 a.m. She walked out the door and Larry was still in the house.
Okay.
But Mr. Rainey walked over to the house, knocked on the door, no one answered, then went home and called the house and no one answered. Larry wasn't there.
But Mary said this. That doesn't mean that's true. She said goodbye to him and everything was fine.
Exactly. I'm just saying that Mr. Rainey is saying Larry wasn't there.
Right, right.
So just because she said he was there when she left doesn't mean he was there. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Rainey even called Marianne at the hardware store and asked her if she knew where Larry was. And she answered no. And then that was it. Which is curious to me as to why Mr. Rainey didn't come forward when he knew that Larry was missing weeks before.
Yeah, unless he just figured it wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't worth him looking because everyone else was looking.
But he was an eyewitness to a truck backing up to the house.
Yeah.
But he never came forward until they came asking him questions.
Unless they just kind of put it out of his mind and he didn't really think about it. And then as he started thinking about it, he goes, oh, I guess that was significant.
Yeah, I guess that was weird. Well, it was weird enough for him to walk over there that morning.
That's true.
So, I mean, that really stayed with him. So their theory is that truck was probably at the farm to load up and then discard Larry's body. But whose truck was that? It was a truck that Mr. Rainey had never seen.
Is it Steve's truck?
And there was no way that Marianne could have loaded Larry's body into a truck by herself because Larry was a big guy. He was 6'4" and over 250 pounds.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So she couldn't have done it by herself. In one of the articles I read, one of the investigators on the case is quoted as saying, there's an old saying, a friend will help you move, but family will help you bury a body. I kind of love that.
Goodness.
I love that saying. And the closest person to Marianne at that time was her brother, Rex. And he's a big, strong guy and just happens to have a truck.
Yeah.
But it wasn't fully identified by Mr. Rainey as the truck that had been in that carport.
So you think family in this case would be stronger than a friend?
Yes.
Well, you know, they say that you can pick your friends and you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. So, along the same lines. I get it. It's almost exactly the same.
So did Marianne kill Larry and did Rex help her move his body? That was the new question.
So is Rex not fond of Larry? Because why would he go? It seems like
everybody was fond of Larry.
Yeah. So why would Rex help out?
Because it was his sister. If it ended up that it was Marianne who did this, it was his sister. So he was going to do whatever he could for his sister. I hope that my brother would help me move your body.
He probably would.
No, I think he likes you more than me.
He'd have to get something out of it, though. There'd have to be a good reason.
Yeah, and there's no money, so.
No.
Phone records were subpoenaed from the Hughes landline. And wouldn't you know it? On the night of March 27th, a phone call was placed from the house to Rex's phone at 10:30 p.m. And Rex then called the Hughes line around 12:30 a.m. So that's kind of weird. Because according to Marianne, she and Larry went to bed between 10 and 10:30 that night. So who's calling Rex after 10:30?
Right.
Rex is questioned and asked about the phone calls. He tells them that he had talked to Larry that night. Larry had called him. Larry was upset, saying that Marianne was going to leave him. I believe he also said that Larry was crying on the phone about Marianne leaving him. Marianne is then asked about the phone calls, and she says that she doesn't remember any phone calls that night.
Of course not.
Marianne and Rex are given polygraph examinations, and Rex passes his, and Marianne fails all of hers.
Oh, straight to prison.
Dun, dun, dun. Don't take a polygraph.
Straight to prison. Nope. Doesn't matter.
But that was it. There was no evidence tying Marianne or Rex to Larry's murder.
Maybe she's just bad at taking tests.
And if you have really bad anxiety, it really messes
just
it up.
Just test anxiety. So you hook a polygraph machine up.
So like I said, there was no evidence tying them to the murder. That is until a jailhouse snitch contacted the sheriff's department.
Ooh.
This inmate said that he had been told by one of the Bondurant twins while in prison that they had been hired by a wife and her son to kill a local businessman.
Is it Bondurant or Bondurant?
Bondurant. Oh, did I say it wrong?
Yeah, I think it's pronounced Bondurant. It doesn't matter.
I think it's Bondurant.
Yeah.
It sounds better anyways.
It's actually a road course in Phoenix. It's called the Bondurant, and that they do track testing of cars.
Oh, that sounds not exciting to me.
It's very exciting. And so when someone says they're doing the Bondurant, their special cars set up. They take like stock cars, but they do this road course, test the cars out, and they do driver, like race car training.
Well, there's your fun fact for this episode.
Anyway.
Bondurant.
So Bondurant.
Not Bondurant.
It's all right.
Okay, well, the Bondurant twins, Pete and Pat, were local drug dealers and serial killers.
Oh.
Who murdered people they believed had wronged them horrifically.
Okay.
Like, they would chop them up and
oh,
it was really, these men, these twins, they called them the killer twins or the evil twins. Sorry. They called them the evil twins, were horrible people.
Out of Pulaski, Tennessee.
Yes. Giles County area. So the informant is saying that Pete and Pat kidnap Larry from the hardware store, forcing him out the building's back door, killed him, and then dumped his body in the trash ditch because they were hired by this woman, Marianne, and her son.
Gotcha.
Except that the hardware store did not have a back door.
Well, I mean, if you push someone hard enough through a wall, you'll create a back door.
No, but it did not have a back door. So eventually, it was discovered.
They're making it up.
That the informant had made up the story to try to finagle time off of his own sentence.
I was going
to
say, I would be very skeptical of snitches.
Right, but this guy was kind of smart because he knew that Giles County was very preoccupied with finding these evil twins and then prosecuting them and putting them behind bars. So he thought, well, this one disappearance and murder that has kind of been pushed to the side because all of the sheriff's department and investigators and police departments are focused on these Bondurant. What did you say? Bondurant.
Bondurant.
On these Bondurant. On these Bond. On these Bondurant twins.
Yeah, because they sound like just lovely people.
So after this, the case goes cold. Marianne sells the farm and life continues on without Larry.
Usually you hear about people that bought the farm.
Oh, well, we will hear about people that bought the farm.
Because that means they died.
Well, the case goes cold for 25 years.
Stop.
25 years, people.
Okay, ugh, so
I can't even imagine what his family went through.
So 2015, it warms up.
It starts to warm up.
Good gotcha.
Job. Look at you, math guy.
Well,
until 2014, when two investigators for the Giles County Sheriff's Department start reopening some of their cold cases.
Mm-hmm.
And they start over from scratch. They're like, all right, we're going to wipe everything clean and we're going to start over from scratch for Larry's murder.
Do you think they call it like a case thawing? Because they said
I'm sure there's a lot of words they use.
Probably. Nothing that we think of.
It's probably a lot of
slang.
Slang and then acronyms. That was the word I was looking for. Now, first they called in Benet, and she was relieved that her father's murder was being investigated again.
I love beignets.
And then, I like her
good,
name.
A good black cup of coffee and a beignet. Oh my gosh. Now I'm starving.
Yeah, Benet. I really liked her name. All right. Well, telling the investigators that she noticed changes in Marianne after her father's death.
Hmm.
Now, she really looked at Marianne as a bonus mom, her second mom. So this had been really, really hard for her because she loved Marianne, but she knew that she had done something to her dad.
That's a tough situation.
So hard. After her father's death, Marianne started buying new clothes, wearing makeup, bought a few cars, and even moved into her own apartment after selling the farm. And she got herself a new man who just happened to be an employee of the hardware store.
Oh, wow.
And this happened very quickly after Larry's death.
Man, they got everything at this hardware store.
They do.
I picture it like one of those little hometown Ace Hardwares, you know, that
they
got everything.
Well, I keep picturing it like Kyle and Macy, his family's hardware store in Fort Bragg.
It's an Ace Hardware.
Yeah. Yep. That's how I'm picturing this hardware
store. It's the only one in town.
And everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows your name. Yep. Everybody knows what you're looking for. And it's just really a great place just to see people and mingle and get what you need.
Because no, where else are you going to go?
Yeah, no Home Depot in sight.
No, no Lowe's.
So Benet told them that Mary Ann believed that she was to get Larry's entire life insurance policy payout, which was a whopping $100,000. This is in 1990. So that's like almost $500,000.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's up there.
But what Mary Ann didn't realize was that most of the insurance money went to paying off Larry's portion of the hardware store. It was an agreement that he had made with the other partners.
Oh. Okay.
So Mary Ann ended up not getting the full amount. She actually received very little of his life insurance policy. To me, I was thinking, how did she not know about the conditions of this policy? How does one not know if you're married to this person? Wouldn't you know what their life insurance money is going to go towards?
Well, then wouldn't she own part of the hardware store?
She did. But this went to paying off Larry's portion.
Gotcha. Interesting.
But I thought so too.
Yeah. Who knows how they set it up, but okay.
The cold case investigators decided to use the local media once more to see if there were any witnesses who 25 years later were willing to come forward with what they knew. Like maybe they had been scared or they didn't want to get involved 25 years before. But guess who called in?
Who?
The now owner of Larry and Mary Ann's 100-acre property.
Ah.
A man by the name of Richard Pierce. He and his wife bought the home in 1998. I don't believe that they bought it from Mary Ann because it sounded like she had sold the property right after Larry was found murdered. So I think they bought it from the person who had actually bought it from Mary Ann.
Gotcha.
But don't quote me on that. This is just me with a timeline in my head.
Yeah.
In 2006, Richard began remodeling the master bedroom, which we are now supposed to call the primary bedroom.
Oh, sure.
Okay, we're not supposed to say master bedroom anymore. We have to say primary. He ripped up the carpet, and on the padding, he saw a 3-foot in diameter brownish red stain.
Why is it always in the bedroom where the blood is?
Because that's where you're sleeping usually. He yelled out to his wife, "I just found where Larry was killed."
What the hell?
And then proceeded to dispose of the carpet and padding and install new hardwood floors.
You wouldn't call the police?
No, he never contacted the police. And this was in 2006.
Oh my gosh.
When asked why he did not contact the police, Richard simply stated, "I figured you'd done all the investigating you were going to do."
Sure. Yeah.
But Richard did allow the police to treat the bedroom as a possible crime scene, and the hardwood floor was removed once again. Now, if there was as much blood as Richard claimed there was, then the blood would have seeped into the plywood subfloor. Luminol was sprayed, and that floor lit up like a pregnancy test.
Goodness. Twins.
There was definitely blood on that piece of plywood in that area.
Yeah.
Samples of the wood and the mattress stuffing were sent to the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations crime lab. And within weeks, results came back positive for male DNA. Now they just needed to match the DNA with Larry's, but there weren't any samples from Larry. Because this is 25 years later, 26 years later. With permission from his family, Larry's body was exhumed. And on September 1st, 2016, the results were in. That was Larry's blood found on the plywood flooring and on the mattress stuffing. He had definitely died in that room.
Oh my gosh.
And 1 month later, in October, a grand jury indicted 69-year-old Marianne Hughes for the first-degree murder of her husband, Larry. Motive being that of the $100,000 life insurance policy that she actually didn't end up getting.
God, she almost got away with it.
Yeah. After Marianne's arrest, she was asked about the blood found in her old bedroom. Marianne said that she remembers Larry cutting his finger once. That would do it for sure. But she was reminded that there were no cuts found on Larry's body during his autopsy. Like on his hands, right. There were no cuts. Marianne then crosses her arms. Now, I watched this on YouTube. Her whole interview is on YouTube. She crosses her arms and leans forward and says, "I did not kill my husband."
Sure.
And then soon after, she was bailed out and went home to be with her family.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what does the family think?
She didn't do it.
Oh. Yeah. So the giant puddle of blood just... What, an accident?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be blood in bedrooms, right? Huge 3-foot diameter blood stains.
That match your deceased husband?
Yeah.
From who was murdered?
Cut on your finger?
And dumped?
His finger? All right, well.
Okay.
The state believed that Larry and Marianne had gotten into a heated argument after arriving home after dinner. For some reason, Marianne then shot Larry twice in the head with his .22, and he either bled out on the bed and then was eventually dragged onto the floor, or because it was a small caliber gun, he didn't die quickly, and he himself rolled onto the floor and then bled out where that stain was.
Yep.
Marianne then called her brother to help her get rid of Larry's body, and then they dumped it. With garbage.
Wow.
And just let him rot. Oh, God, that makes me so sad. Now, this was such a horrible way to die. Really. I mean, poor Larry. They're saying that he probably didn't die immediately from the gunshot or gunshots because they were such small caliber bullets that he probably suffered and knew what was happening.
Oh, geez.
I know. Since so much time had gone by since the actual murder, the prosecution thought it was too risky to take the case to trial. So with Larry's family's permission, Marianne was offered a plea deal. And on August 29th, 2019, 29 years after Larry was killed, Marianne pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter in exchange for time served and 10 years probation. But because she had been bailed out, Marianne served hardly any time behind bars for murdering her husband of 17 years.
Time served, but she didn't serve any time.
Exactly, because she was bailed out. She hardly served any time.
So how is that a reasonable result?
It's not, but for the family who agreed to this, and I read some interviews and saw some interviews, they said that it was finally closure because she had admitted to killing Larry. And they just wanted somebody to admit to doing it.
Right. And now she's going to have to face everyone.
Yes, because she can't leave. She's stuck in the county because she's on probation.
Oh, could you imagine? It would be more of a nightmare for her to have to be out.
Yeah, because there's some people who think she didn't do it, and then there's others who know she did it. So, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot for such a tight-knit community to have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, so you just ignore her because it's weird.
Or she becomes the town gossip.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's Marianne. Did you know she killed her husband and got away with it?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Now, her brother Rex was never charged for his possible involvement in the disposal of Larry's body and the disposal of possible evidence because they never found the gun. But Rex died a year later after she said that she did it, that she murdered him.
Huh.
He died a year later. To this day, Marianne has never said why she did what she did or how she did it. She did admit to the killing, but she kind of got away with it.
So she
never
just
served any time, really.
So she just continued to carry on like nothing happened.
I mean, she kind of carries a scarlet M on her chest.
Yeah.
But other than that, she just goes on with her life. And Marianne's probation will end in 2029.
And then her life can start.
Then she can travel.
Sure.
Get yourself a passport, Marianne, and go travel.
Good luck.
That's wild, right?
A little bit.
Yeah, I thought this case was pretty crazy. Now, I have an interesting fact. I'm not going to say fun facts anymore. I'm going to say interesting facts.
Okay.
I remember we decided that on our last Patreon, but I've seen photos of Larry's gravesite and his headstone, and it's one of those couples' headstones. So Marianne's name is right next to his as his wife, and it looks like when she dies, she will be buried right next to Larry.
Which is weird because she's the one that killed him.
Exactly. And what's so incredibly sad is that even after all these years, Larry's family is still devastated by his murder and still mourning his loss every single day, which to me just shows how truly wonderful this man was. So when Marianne dies and she is buried next to him, Larry's family will know that he is sharing a plot with the person who murdered him.
Well, I think you should write on his headstone, say, here lies Larry, 1990, died 1990, right?
Right.
Say was shot and killed by his wife, Mary. And then over on the other side, it says, here lies Mary, who murdered her husband to your right.
Ugh.
I don't know. I mean, what do you write on a headstone like that?
I don't know. I mean, it's already written out.
Yeah.
It's her name and then when she's born and then there's no death date on it.
Yeah.
Until she dies.
Like if he died in 1990, it says here he lies. He was murdered by his wife, Mary. And then right next to him is Mary. And she died, you know, in 2029 or whatever.
This is Mary. She killed her husband lying next to her.
Or just doesn't say anything. Just says her name and when she died. And it's much, you know, years and years later.
Wow.
And someone walking by those grave sites is like, what the hell?
I mean, it's kind of morbid, but we should probably have that on our headstones too.
Yeah.
Just to cause a conversation. Here lies Melissa. She killed her husband, Daniel. And then next to it's like, here lies Daniel. I just thought that was really interesting. That caught my eye. And it takes me back to my grandparents because they share a plot. But they're buried on top of each other. And it was always a big joke as to who was going to be on top. Remember?
Well,
my grandparents.
Once she finally joined him, then you could say, well, now the plot thickens.
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
That was a good one, babe. All right. So that's just where my mind went. I thought it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, Daniel, what did you think of my case?
I think everyone should be divorced and single. It's just not worth it anymore. Someone's going to try and kill somebody.
I'm never going to run out of cases. Every week, there's at least a handful of spouses who have attempted to murder or murdered their spouse. It's wild to me.
There's going to be a shortage.
I hope so. Man. I hope there's going to start being a shortage of cases. This is insane. Please just get divorced. Do not kill your spouse or your loved one. It's not worth it. You're going to get caught even 25 years later.
Well, if, you know, it depends on how you want to adjust the statistics. But if they say 50% of marriages end in divorce, we're sitting here going, just get divorced. Don't murder each other. So then there's the divorce and then there's the murder. So it's like even fewer.
So maybe people shouldn't get married.
I don't know.
We are not advocating marriage.
I don't know anymore.
And what I was thinking during this is, wow, Marianne was a great housekeeper because she was able to clean that blood spot out of the carpet and sell the house.
Okay, so I'm fairly handy.
You are.
Ish, right? I would dismantle the subfloor and reframe everything, rebuild it completely. You'd never know.
But that's pretty obvious if you're hammering away at a room.
Okay, but no one went in the room.
No one went in.
That's what I'm saying. Once she realizes that they're never going to go in because they never had grounds to do a warrant and search the home.
Right.
And start tearing up carpet. I mean.
It's wild.
Yeah.
If they would have just been able to go into that house and rip up that carpet, she would have been in prison.
Yeah. So I guess my point is, I'm surprised she sold the house and didn't rip up the carpet and do whatever it took to get rid of it. Because then whoever moved in they'd never know.
She knew she was going to get away with it. Probably. Yeah.
Had she done that. So we're trying to help people out.
I know.
Here's how you get away with things, right? So you see her mistake. So don't make the mistake she made. Make sure you tear up the carpet.
Please make the mistake.
If there's a big blood spot on the subfloor, you got to cut out the wood. It's just terrible.
It is terrible. And I just feel so bad for Larry's family. And he sounded like such a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And this always happens to the best people, it seems like.
He wasn't even a jerk.
No.
Well, I mean, maybe he was,
no, but it didn't sound like he was. It sounds like he was this great guy. And it actually, he had a younger brother, and they said that, like, really his family and his younger brother were never the same after his death. So, and they said eventually it killed him. It killed his youngest brother. Like, the heartbreak.
So why did she want so badly to not be with him, so much so that she wanted to kill him as opposed to divorce him?
Well, in speculating, you can say she thought she was going to get $100,000, which back then was now worth probably close to $500,000.
Yeah, okay, but that's going to go quick.
All right, but it also sounded like maybe she had a boyfriend.
Okay, then have a boyfriend.
Right.
On the side. Have a boyfriend. And then maybe.
Or just leave him. My God.
Or just leave him.
But also their lives were so intertwined. It would have been hard to leave him and the business and the farm and the family. And
maybe she was tired of the whole forearm and the cow's butt.
Oh, she didn't want to artificially inseminate cattle
anymore? I don't know. Maybe that was her job.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because he didn't have fingers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's still alive. So maybe somebody can ask her.
Yeah. I'm not. But, you know, someone else can.
Well, my information on this case came from all the possible articles I could find. I searched and I dug and I dug and I dug as much as I could. And I did find pieces of Marianne's arrest warrant in one of those articles that I found. And I watched a show called Living a Nightmare that did an episode on Larry's case. And I got to see interviews with his daughter and the investigators and his nephew and people like that. And they were still shocked by what happened and still very emotional. And it was really sad to watch. So, you know, once again, pray for Larry's family. And I guess we'll see. Hopefully Marianne doesn't do this again.
I don't think so.
Probably not.
She's getting up there.
If you are enjoying the show, please go rate and review us. And if you want more, there's always the Patreon. You can always join that. And you get bonus episodes all month long.
Mm-hmm.
Same format, different kinds of cases. And then we have a couple extras thrown in there too. Some fun ones where you get to know us a little bit more. I think that's it, right?
I think so. Other than the obvious, which is...
which is what? Be careful?
Be careful. No, you say be careful.
I just did. Be careful.
Because marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always a better option.
Go with that one.
Bye.
Bye.